Okay, appreciate everybody coming back after the break. Before I get started, I want to thank my my co-authors, Lynn Fenstermaker and Jane Belknap at Desert Research Institute and USGS. So we have really a basic problem here in trying to measure carbon dynamics in deserts. Back in around the mid-2000s, there was a lot of controversy over a missing piece of the carbon budget. It was about 100 grams per meter square of carbon per year that was missing from eddy covariance and field methods. And there was some discussion and experiments that were done to see if maybe the biological processes of these crusts, of these essentially these biological crusts, could be participating or in contributing to some of the missing carbon. And so this is a sort of fairly basic question that we were trying to answer. And so the picture on the right, I don't have a light pen here, so the picture on the right shows these biological crusts, and they come in many different forms, whether it's algae and cyanobacteria and things like that. And you know, and we all know here in this room that many of the hydrologic processes are dominated by really the near surface soil water, everything from photosynthesis to microbial respiration. Oh, my man. Good shoot. I can even use it. Okay, and also there's a lot of partitioning between latent heat flux and sensible heat flux and all the regional climate and these kinds of things. And so what we wanted to do is really just look and see how the measurement technology itself and the USGS had installed a particular type of these probes out in the field, and we wanted to see whether we might be able to improve on the measurements and the reliability of the measurements for these crusts. And so this just gives you a picture of the crusts. There were some people that thought that this was this one down here looked like it was one of those buns they sell over at the stores in the morning, and I can tell you that they aren't. You're welcome to try it. And essentially, you can see really how rough these surfaces are for the cyanobacteria and the mosses and things like that. And trying to monitor something like this, they're very brittle. Trying to monitor it with a TDR probe or a reflectometer, like a capacitance probe type thing, is a real challenge. So there's a lot of papers recently that have been sort of published on how water content and ambient temperature affect microbial respiration. This is known as dark respiration. As well as photosynthesis and how that changes the carbon budgets in the deserts. And so this was done in a laboratory in Las Vegas. We sampled some of these muffins and brought it back to the lab, and then we put them under a wide spectrum lamps, and we wetted them up with a squeeze bottle, and then we measured the water content using the dual probe heat pulse method, which is about a 3-centimeter long probe. And it basically measures the thermal properties of the soil, and you can back out the water content using the solution to the heat flow equation. And so we see kind of a nice linearity here between the volumetric water content and the carbon flux, and the same thing has more or less been done in photosynthesis, measuring photosynthesis. It's a very tricky measurement to make because generally the samples are pulled out of the field, they're then brought back to the lab, and then, you know, all of the issues of trying to deal with this, lab and applicability to the field situation always comes up. And so this here with the little black circles, you'll be seeing this here in a little bit. And these were taken in the Mojave Desert, and we're slightly up elevation from Mojave. So here's really what the research objectives. We want to compare the thermal probe to the frequency domain probe. This is a Campbell 616 probe that's 30 centimeters long. We're going to compare it to the thermal method, which is the dual probe heat pulse method. We want to look at this and how it affects carbon exchange. And I have my hypotheses down there. There's differences between the two and things like that. Our experimental design. This is really a seed grant. This is what I would call an extremely low budget project. We were able to borrow probes. We took a car. We didn't register it, and then we went out to the field for a couple of days. And they wondered where the mileage came from. We didn't know. And so we had 8 thermal probes total. They were installed in a couple of field sites. They differed by, there was an infrared treatment on the two plots, but we found statistically they weren't significant, so I won't really talk about it too much. The probes were oriented vertically for a couple of months, and then we changed them to 45-degree angle, which gives us a 3-centimeter penetration for the first couple of months, and then a 1.7-centimeter penetration, so we get super, you know, really ultra close to ground surface. And then there were frequency domain probes that were installed in the same plots, and this just shows the picture. So you can see these things are installed at about 5-centimeter depth, horizontally into the plot. So this black line here is the plot boundary. These are our probe heads. This is in the control plot, and then you can see, so there were three frequency domain probes, and there were four heated probes in each one of the plots. This washed out image that I took from East 30 sensors is the probe, and then this is a 616 from Campbell. From the methods, this is some work I did back in 2008. So we're solving the heat flow equation for an infinite line source for a short width pulse of 8 seconds, and basically in this method. We are optimizing on the water content and the needle spacing to match the temperature curve that occurs for 80 seconds after the heating stops. And we're doing that until the delta temperature here is minimized. The 616 measurement is very straightforward. It's just a frequency that's converted into water content. And then we measured statistical analyses using the probe type, the orientation, the treatment being IR versus control, and then the precipitation events were essentially variables in the statistics. So this gives you a sense of what the traces look like with time. So we get the stars here are sort of discrete rainfall events over this time period, which occurred for pretty much the winter dry down through the monsoon period and into the fall. So we had a number of seasons as the moving forward. It wasn't in there long enough, but we were able to get some data, and you can see the bars here are the height of the precip, and there's the precip there, and then the red solid and the green solid lines are the DPHP, and then the dashed lines are the 616. So you see that the probes are all responding properly, but that the probe response is much higher on the DPHP. If we really want to try to look at the two of these things together, these graphs basically start to bend the data. So here's the vertical versus the slant data. There's some slight differences here. This is just for a number of precipitation events, which is on the X. So we expect the water content to go higher with a higher rainfall amount. Here's the change in the water content. You can see a big difference in the water content change for this reflectometer versus the dual probe heat pulse. And the reason for that, of course, is that these events are basically only saturating the material above the top of the waveguides, not below. So half of the probe and the range of the probe is not being affected by the water content. So you would expect about a 50% increase in the water content from the DPHP, which is more or less about what we got. So you can see there's a big drop in the reduction in the increase in the water content between the two. And these are just sort of to show the statistics that the pool DPHP versus the FDR probes were very statistically different between the two. We looked at within treatments. So here in this case, this is the dual probe pulse. We're actually somewhat above the one-to-one line between the control and the heated. And I'll explain that why that is in a second. It's mainly because the crusts and the biological crusts themselves are different between the control and the treated plot. The FDR probes, you can see a much, much tighter response in terms of the water content, and I put the scales the same so you can really see that the spread is much less, but at the same time, we're above the one-to-one line between the control and the heated. And so this was a question, well, why is that real, and is there something going on in the treatment between the heated lamp versus the control? And our theory here is that the cyanobacteria and the moss, it has a higher soil content. It's actually more of a filamental type of a biological crust versus a true moss, which is that kind of muffin-like crust that's sitting on the surface, which has a much higher porosity and so a much lower water holding capacity. And so we see really not a water content, water holding capacity stops at about 25% water content versus close to 50% for this a little bit more silt and sand that kind of reduces some of the larger pores. And so there, you know, as we get to the punchline here, the real question is, well, okay, we all would expect there to be differences between these two probes. And then now the question that Danny's going to ask is, well, why does this matter? And so I'm going to answer this question for Danny. And so I basically took the water content, binned all the water contents by the values themselves, looked at only daylight hours when there's photosynthesis, and what you're looking at are the number of daylight hours between the two different technologies. It's a big difference, you know, where you're really getting a mean value here around 0.05%, you know, lots of hours at that value, and most of the readings for the FDR probe is essentially zero or near zero. And if you recall the other graph that I had, it was essentially it was somewhat of a Gaussian distribution. I took the data from Brostaff 2005, fitted a second order polynomial, and then basically calculated if we're going from water content to photosynthetic rate, that should be micromoles, not millimoles, and then converted that into grams of carbon. The difference between the two technologies yields about 46.8 grams per meter square of carbon over this 150-day period or so versus 5.1 grams per meter square. So there's a nine-fold difference in the amount of carbon that's essentially gained through photosynthesis just by the technology itself. And to us, that seemed to be kind of an interesting finding. And so just some observations, the larger range of influence of this frequency domain sensor is oversampling the soil. And so we're really measuring what's happening underneath the crust, which we didn't really want to measure. So the thermal probe seems to be much more effective at measuring just the surface. Of course, putting these probes in at an angle, you know, the frequency domain probe at an angle or vertically would make the problem worse. So I'm not sure that it's the best technology. We're using ambient temperature and knowledge of hours at specific water content to get an estimate of carbon exchange. And I would say, after pining away with these data, that the frequency domain probe is a much easier data set to analyze than the data from the DPHP. So these are still, I think, somewhat in research phase. I mean, we can get pretty solid data with it, but it's still a little tricky to deal with. And, you know, there's a lot of practical applications. Practical, I guess, if you're dealing with biotic carbon pathways in deserts. But anyway, that's about all I've got to say, and I'm happy to take any questions. Yes?
So how the sample count of 1.7 centimeters? So if you only sample to 1 centimeter or a half centimeter, do you think the relationship
is higher? It might. I think what happens, though, is you start losing heat from the surface. So we're heating that needle up, and if it gets too close to the surface, you're going to lose some of that thermal energy to the ground surface. And I think at some point, there's going to be diminishing returns. And also, you know, these crusts are not, you know, it's not a nice surface. It has pinnacles, and it's pretty rough. So I think that the more you get to the
surface. Okay, but in terms of just the water content, so if you just measure water content at the top 2 millimeters, is that going to increase what you...
It should, sure. I mean, we should be able to measure, you know, millimeter rainfall events, right? And that's kind of the goal, because these crusts are all responding to these small events, not just the large ones. Correct. Yeah. So there's a lot that needs to be done on this. You know, I think that what we've found is that the technologies in the past have really not been very effective at this. We're right now down a, you know, I don't want to say that I did the calculations of carbon last night in the hotel room, but there's a lot more that needs to be done to really nail this thing down, particularly ambient temperature, things like photosynthetically active radiation. All of these are features and factors that are going to affect the true carbon gain. These are things we're looking into. Yep.
That's very great. Yeah.
Certainly higher than the soil.
Yeah. Okay. So any calibration you have in your soil sensor would be wrong.
Well, so we account for the organic carbon content in the curve. So the, all the specific heats in the
one.
That's right.
Okay. The other ones, though, you need off the shelf. So they're wrong. Then
yes.
What you're made of, you can account for that. Is that correct? I mean,
Yeah, sure. So you can, so if the, basically you're looking at the individual specific heats of the parts of the bulk soil, the air phase, water phase, the solid mineral phase, and the organic phase. And these are, of course, now four, it's a four component mixing model. And so we use that in our calibration, in our curve to basically solve this. Now, the difference with the organics is very, very small impact. It's a really second order impact, yeah. And it's really the mineral soil and the air phase and the water phase that just dominates all of these things. So we didn't find through, you know, many, through another project that the organics really didn't matter too much.
What's really high water?
50%, it seems high, yeah. It's not terrible. Okay, thank you.
Let's move to the next. Thank you, Mike.